Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, February 24, 2022. Sudan's deputy military leader is in Russia for an official visit.
The economic effects of the West cutting off assistance to Sudanists is disastrous because you have an already dysfunctional economic situation.
And as the prices of oil increases in the international markets, authorities in South Sudan say there is a decrease in oil production.
The daily production per day have actually so much decreased because more than 200 and something was submerged by water. But it is still around 150 plus.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top Sudanese military general is visiting Moscow to explore bilateral relations amid escalating tension between Russia and the West over Russia's attack on Ukraine and increasing isolation of Sudan's military rulers by the West following the October 2021 military takeover in Khartoum. Analysts say the visit came in the backdrop of a worsening economic situation in Sudan. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Washington.
The visit to Moscow by Sudan's second top general, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, on Wednesday must be viewed in the context of Sudan's current economic crisis. According to Samah Salman, a strategic and economic analyst and president of the civil society group U.S. Educated Sudanese Association, Salman says while Sudan's economy has been faltering for years, the military takeover on October 25th and the West's subsequent cutting off of assistance to Sudan dealt a serious blow to the Northeast African country's economy.
The economic effects of the West cutting off assistance to Sudanists is disastrous because you have an already dysfunctional economic situation. To start on a program to cancel 80% of Sudan's $60 billion debts. So we're talking about $46 billion in debt, which is now hanging in the balance. Inflation continues to hover over 400%, and this is Sudan now has the second highest level of inflation in the world after Venezuela.
Following the October coup, the U.S. immediately suspended $700 million in aid to Sudan, which was intended for humanitarian and democratic transition assistance. The U.S. and other Western countries suspended assistance worth billions of dollars to Sudan and paused a program to cancel most of Sudan's external debts, standing at nearly $60 billion. Sudan's local currency has been deteriorating against the U.S. dollar, while its inflation rate is one of the highest in the world. Senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center, Cameron Hudson, says Sudan has reason to turn to Russia for help.
There's certainly an economic motivation here, although Russia is not, you know, a donor country. It's not an economic powerhouse. So I think with the trip to Russia, it's even more of a signal of a strategic shift and trying to play on U.S. or Western fears that Sudan, as much as it has been trying to pivot into maybe a Western or U.S. Orientation, it might now, in fact, be pivoting back.
Hudson says building friendly relations with Sudan also serves Russia's strategic interests in Africa.
Russia grows its presence in Africa through a deeper partnership and relationship with Sudan. And if you just look at the map, they've tried to gain a foothold in Libya, through their support to Haftar. They have clearly taken root in Central African Republic. They're now in Mali. And so they are executing on a strategy to rebuild their influence across Africa. And, you know, a relationship with Sudan and a seaport on the Red Sea, you know, gives them really a huge strategic advantage.
Russia signed an agreement with former Sudan military ruler Omar al-Bashir to build a naval base on the Red Sea. The agreement was put on hold during the civilian-led transitional government, but since the military takeover in October, officials have indicated the project might still be on the table. Salman says the visit by General Daglo, also known as Hemeti, to Russia is no surprise as he has been engaged with Russia through the Wagner Group, a pseudo-private Russian military company operating in parts of Africa.
We can see Russian hegemony in Africa through an entity called the Wagner Group. Even though the Wagner Group is reported to be a private security company, many reports show that it's actually a state actor or a state-linked actor. And it is one of the primary actors that the Russian government is using to intensify its competition with the U.S. in Africa. Russia uses the Wagner Group to supply Russian military assets, weapons, and funds to fragile countries like Sudan, Central African Republic, Mozambique, Libya, Mali, and Madagascar.
Salman says there is evidence that the Wagner Group is supporting General Daglo's rapid support forces in exchange for lucrative mining deals in Sudan. Salman says Sudan's military rulers are seeking support from Russia in case the U.S. follows through with threats of imposing targeted sanctions on the leaders of the Sudan military coup.
I believe that General Hemeti and General Burhan, they know that the possibility of targeted sanctions from the U.S. looms over their heads after they carried out the October 25th coup. And Hemeti will be looking to an alliance with Russia for continued military and financial assistance, especially as a preemptive measure if such sanctions by the U.S. are imposed on them.
For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
South Sudan's oil production has reduced from 170,000 barrels to 150 barrels per day. South Sudan's Minister for Petroleum says the government is working with oil companies to increase daily production. Ding Magot reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Petroleum and Mining Minister Port Kang Chol says oil production decreased amid negative impacts of widespread flooding in oil-producing areas of the country.
The daily production per day have actually so much decreased because more than 200 and something was submerged by water. But it is still around 150 plus. What we produce today is not the same as tomorrow, but it is still above 150.
Chol says workers, especially technical staff, are being trained in preparation for the planned increase in oil production.
There is a meeting that is going on in the oil. The technical team are discussing with companies that may have the technical know-how on how to increase production. It's one thing that we have been looking at. It's one thing that we are longing for. And it's the most important thing because the oil prices are up high.
Chol says the government will carry out a survey on oil blocks to assess how much oil exists in each block.
The plane is at the airport. We have bought the plane for that purpose and equipped with all the equipment because we want to build our own data. And it's going to be run by a company, people, expert from British. We will come and train South Sudanese so that next time they are not there, South Sudanese will be able to do it. The importance of that is that, number one, our data has been managed from Khartoum, so we don't know what we have.
Chol says his ministry will publish all production data in a bid to improve the transparency and accountability in the petroleum sector. He says the ministry will publish a periodic magazine detailing the number of barrels of oil produced.
I would want this ministry to be the most transparent ministry if there is a way to do it. And this is what we are longing for. And this is what we are going toward of. In the next few weeks, you might be invited to a forum where we will be launching a magazine, petroleum magazine, which will show you all that we had in the Republic of South Sudan.
The Xinhua Chinese news agency reports South Sudan earned $1.4 billion in gross oil revenues last year, of which $1.1 billion went to direct transfers, and $148 million was paid to neighboring Sudan for processing, transportation, and transit fees. South Sudan is projected to collect $135 million in non-oil revenues in the 2021-2022 fiscal year, an increase of 31.1% from the $103 million in the 2020-2021 fiscal year. South Sudan's Finance and Economic Planning Minister, Agaka Chuel Lual, said while presenting budget proposals for the 2021-2022 fiscal year that the government projects an increase in the oil revenues due to recent tax administration reforms, including digitized tax collections and broadening the tax base. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
The head of World Bank's country office in South Sudan is calling on the leaders of the country to enact public policies aimed at promoting potential local entrepreneurs and job creation. Faraz Raad says South Sudan faces challenges in diversifying its economy and creating broad-based jobs. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Faraz Raad, country manager of the World Bank Group in South Sudan on Wednesday, released the South Sudan Economic Monitor report entitled Towards a Jobs Agenda. Raad says over the past decade, South Sudan experienced major shocks including conflict, climate change, COVID-19 and desert locusts that hurt the agricultural sector, all of which affected the country's development. Raad says all of those things had a devastating impact on the livelihoods, communities and businesses of people.
Two of the most paramount development challenges and opportunities facing the country revolve around economic diversification and broad-based job creation. The country is still too reliant on oil, which represents nearly 90% of fiscal revenues. But it is blessed with a geography and a geology that carries immense economic potential flowing from the agricultural sector. The question is, how do you catalyze the economic transformation towards diversification into these sectors?
Raad says the economic growth dropped last year due to a number of challenges, but it is improving this year.
Our South Sudan Economic Monitor is forecasting positive economic growth of 1.2% in fiscal year 22, driven by improving macroeconomic conditions and improvements in the service and trade sectors. This positive growth stands in contrast to the negative 5.4% last year, when economic growth contracted significantly due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and widespread flooding in the country. We also project that the South Sudanese economy could grow by 3.5 to 5% over the medium term if the peace process holds, the economic management reform program creates positive impact, and global and regional economic recovery does not falter.
Raad says only 6% of South Sudanese workers are employed by established businesses, a number that has to rise. Raad says the World Bank is inspired by the untapped vitality of young entrepreneurs in South Sudan and that public policies and programs should be established to unleash the full potential of entrepreneurs. He says policies should be enacted to support job productivity.
For economic recovery, as everyone knows, to succeed and to be meaningful, it must be backed by a policy that helps to generate broad-based growth in job opportunities for the country's expanding youth population. Specifically, such a policy, in our view, should seek to raise the productivity and incomes of the very jobs that most South Sudanese hold at the moment, and which are mainly informal, freelance, or household-related jobs in agriculture and services.
Jenna Ketch, Vice Chancellor of the University of Juba, says the biggest problem with existing employment is low wages for civil service employees. He says many people will opt to go to work in the private sector because they pay better.
We graduate in excess around 2,000 average every year. Some of them are already working, most of them go to private. But there are issues with this unemployment. We need to know really. World Bank need to look about unemployment really and who is affected by that. But what we know from the university perspective, the civil service, public sector is letting us down because it's a low wage. You know, imagine an undersecretary receiving 5,000. Are you serious?
Aket says low wages and delays in salaries also affect access to finances for people to borrow from banks. He says access to skills is also a big problem in South Sudan, as there are very limited vocational studies for the youth to develop their skills and compete in the industry. Julia Akerduan, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Public Service and Human Resource Development, says there is also a problem of mismatched skills. For example, she says when an IT officer is required, a relative may bring in someone with a mismatched skill set to take up that position. She says the ministry is working to address those matters as well as other challenges.
But the good news of the reforms we are talking about, the payroll, we want to make sure that the headcount is right. The people we are employing, the skills are matching with what they are doing. And so that we know exactly whom we are paying. And I would think the World Bank is going to come to our aid to provide us with a biometric electronic system so that we can be able to know the headcount.
Duane says her ministry has also hired professionals to help with payroll and pensions. She says the government is also working to provide attractive remuneration to attract qualified people who work in the private sector. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Upper Nile State crack down on gangs. Stay tuned for details after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Authorities in the Upper Nile State capital, Malakal, say they are cracking down on gang members to reduce criminal activities in the town. The police commissioner for Upper Nile State says more than 70 suspected gangsters were rounded up and are being questioned by the police before being arraigned in court. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
Major General Chola Temjonget, the police commissioner for Upper Nile State, says police apprehended 75 gang members in Malakal town. General Jonget says those arrested are suspected of carrying out attacks, robberies and house break-ins around town.
Aim is to stop the situation which may cause insecurity. Yeah, the operations must continue, because we want to absolutely seeing that nothing in kind or inconvenient side the wrong use they used to provoke a situation of the security in the town of Malakal.
Earlier this month, a group of suspected armed robbers broke into a shop belonging to Sudanese businessman Ibrahim Abdallah in Longochu County and killed him. Gerald Jonget says that incident and several others prompted him to improve security and restore peace in Malakal.
Those who remain there will be taken to court because some people's, all those that process being injured, convicted with serious injuries. So all these causes we will put on them, especially the ringleaders.
Jonget says police are interrogating and screening the suspects before arraigning them in a court of law. He says the police operation force will continue to pursue gang members until they eliminate criminal activity in the town. Jonget is urging residents to help police restore law and order in the town.
Parents must to keep their children and their sons and daughters very close to them, warn them of wrong behaviors. They should not leave them to stay alone on the street or in the market.
Malakal Deputy Mayor Peter Yangthorn says gang violence has been on the rise in Malakal town over the last few years.
The issue of gangsters, here in Malakal, their numbers have increased. Here in the town, up to 13 groups. There is a group called Atlantics, there is CBM group, and there is a Star Voice group. They have very many groups, up to 13 groups. All these groups are violent when they fight and they injure themselves and other people.
Some Malakal residents welcome the government crackdown, saying the town has been relatively calm after weeks of panic caused by the rise in gang violence. The residents are urging Upper Nile State authorities to arraign the suspect as soon as possible, and if found guilty, sentence the criminals to serve time in correctional facilities, where they can reform and become law-abiding citizens after serving their prison terms. For VOA News, I am Deng Haiding in Bor.
The UN peacekeeping mission in Central African Republic has rejected accusations that four of its personnel who were arrested Monday were engaged in suspicious activities. The Central African Republic's public prosecutor said the four men arrested at the airport shortly before the arrival of the country's president were heavily armed. Carol Valde has more from the capital, Bangui.
The UN peacekeeping mission, known as MINUSCA, is demanding the release of the four peacekeepers, all French soldiers. CAR authorities have not filed any charges against the men, but the country's public prosecutor said on national radio that an investigation is open on the case. He said the four men were arrested aboard a suspicious vehicle carrying a heavy military arsenal. Right after the arrest, messages on social media accused the peacekeepers of planning to assassinate CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra, whose plane was about to land at the airport. MINUSCA spokesperson Vladimir Monteiro dismissed the accusation during a press conference on Wednesday.
Nous n'avons rien à cacher. La MINUSCA est là comme partenaire, est là comme ami. La MINUSCA regrette l'incident du lundi 21 février et condamne de nouveau la tentative d'instrumentalisation et de manipulation de l'opinion publique et rejette catégoriquement les accusations d'atteinte à la sûreté.
We have nothing to hide, he said. MINUSCA is here as a partner, as a friend. What's said on social media is disinformation. Montero said MINUSCA regrets the incident on Monday, February the 21st, and condemns again the intent to manipulate public opinion and firmly rejects the accusations of attacking state security. The four military personnel remain in police custody, but they are being treated well, says a source at the UN peacekeeping mission. The CAR government has refused to comment the case. Carol Valad for VOA News, Bangui, Central African Republic.
From Central Africa, we move to Southern Africa, where Malawi and UN agencies are launching an emergency response to the country's polio outbreak, the first in Africa in 5 years. The plan includes mass immunization of children under 5 years of age and intensive surveillance to prevent the virus from spreading further. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
The move comes few days after the country declared a national health emergency after a 3-year-old child was paralyzed by the virus, which is the same strain found in Pakistan. Enoki Pale is Deputy Minister of Health in Malawi. He told a press conference in the capital Lilongwe Tuesday that despite the fact that the strain is imported, there is need for a swift action against its spread.
We're doing whatever we can to make sure that we break the infectious circle. And one of them is to bring the public awareness, because it's root of infection to being water and food. The disease is a disease global concern and affect everybody, including even our neighbors.
Malawi last reported a polio case in 1992. The country was declared polio-free in 2005, 15 years before the African continent was declared polio-free. The emergency response plan includes a rollout of mass vaccination campaign for all children under 5 years of age and disease surveillance across the country. Dr. Janet Kaita is country representative for WHO in Malawi.
But the specific outbreak response is a national immunization campaign targeting all children aged under 5 with the polio vaccine, which is 2 oral drops, and it will be repeated again in a second round. But what is really, really key is that every under 5, wherever they are reached. So that includes in the districts worst affected by Tropical Storm Anna.
So far, a team of experts and rapid response teams from a non-profit, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, have arrived in Malawi. The organization, based at the WHO regional office in Africa, says it aims to support coordination, case tracking, data management, communications, and operations. The Ministry of Health says other partner organizations such as UNICEF, USA CDC, and Africa CDC have also started sending teams to support emergency operations and innovative vaccination campaign solutions. Like many other countries in the world, Malawi provides a polio vaccine that targets type 1 and type 3 of the polio virus, following the eradication of polio virus type 2 many years back. However, WHO says research into the new case in Malawi has shown that the 3-year-old child has type 1 and that the child was not fully vaccinated against the disease. No reason is given for failure to complete the polio vaccine, but some health experts cite pandemic-related preventive measures such as social distancing as factors adding to the challenge in getting children vaccinated. Malawi's community health ambassador, Maziko Matemba, suggests the need to empower community healthcare workers with the skill to identify polio cases.
The community system structure needs to be operating, because maybe you can observe our community health workers, if not, maybe they are not well supported, maybe they were not able to identify that we have a problem of an unvaccinated individual in the community, which I think has got this.
According to the Ministry of Health, authorities are now working to finalize the budget for all activities to be submitted to the Global Polio Eradication Initiative and other partners for funding the implementation of the emergency response plan, expected to start in 4 or 6 weeks' time. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zaman Kuruju.
Zaman Kuruju Jack. Samanta kuruju ja waladi Samanta kuruju ja yoma Samanta kuruju ja piti
We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zaman Kuruju. As you have heard in this broadcast, South Sudan's economy depends on oil, so we must all cultivate our lands to produce more food. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.